Today, I'm personally speaking, our guest is Andrew Keenan Bolger, a great actor and writer, a singer and dancer. Stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, an actor, singer, author, and filmmaker. Andrew Keenan Bolger joins me now. Andrew starred on Broadway as Jesse Tuck in Tuck Everlasting, and he created the role of Crutchy in the original Broadway cast of Newsies. His other Broadway credits include Mary Poppins, Seussical, and Beauty and the Beast. Andrew is currently starring in a new off-Broadway production called Dracula, a comedy of terrors, a comedic reimagining of Bram Stoker's horror classic. Andrew is a native of Detroit, and he received a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Musical Theater from the University of Michigan. He's here with us today to talk about his life, his family, his career, including his latest production and the values that mean the most to him. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, Andrew Keenan Bolger. For those who don't know, Andrew is now appearing on a show about Dracula, a comedy of terrors. Of all the movies and all the plays we've seen about Dracula, I go back to seeing Frank Langella on Broadway many years ago. Tell us why there's a new production. What's it about? How is it different from every element of Dracula we thought we knew before?
You're right. I mean, at this point, there have just been hundreds of adaptations of the Bram Stoker classic. And then if you count just any related vampire saga, there's thousands of them. I don't totally know why we are so obsessed with Dracula. I think there is something about he's dangerous, he's kind of sexy, he's scary. Whatever the reason, Americans are obsessed with this property. And I think our version, it is a completely fresh take. We take all of those many, many different versions. And we kind of do a send up of all of the classic versions and all the stories of Dracula that's happened before and do it as a comedy, which you would think it would not be so natural, but let me tell you, it is hilarious. It's a completely fresh take. It's hilariously written by the twisted minds of Gordon Greenberg and Steve Rosen, who are two incredible writers, and just features some really scene-stealing performances.
Andrew Keenan Bolger is our guest. Andrew, every parent likes it when they go see their kids in school plays. It's wonderful as an avocation. Most parents don't want their kids to go into the world of the arts, though, because there's nothing steady about it. So tell me how it came to be that not just you, but your two sisters chose a world in the arts. And did your parents from the get-go say, yeah, go for it, even though most people choose it avocation, not vocation? You chose it as vocation. How come?
You know, I don't even necessarily know if I chose it. I think I'm probably 6 years younger than my oldest sister.
Okay.
And I just grew up seeing her in plays. My parents don't come from a theatrical background at all. But right away, my oldest sister, Celia, I think when she turned 5 or 6, wanted to be on the stage. And I just grew up seeing her in that. And I really never considered that. I always assumed that was something that you did. Once you turn 5 or 6, then you go and do theater. And I think it wasn't until I was a little bit older that I realized, oh, some kids go play soccer. Some kids do gymnastics. I assumed everybody got to go and be in a show as soon as they were old enough to say lines. And it just felt like a natural fit for all of us. I think we fell in love with the community. We all just had like a huge passion for it. And our parents, God bless them, were just, they saw that we had this passion and this desire and just supported us. And they sent all three of us to art school, which usually does not have a good payoff. I think they would be pretty proud though, knowing how we turned out.
Now, you know, I have, like you, I have two sisters. One is a lawyer and one is an executive assistant. None of them went into the priesthood, thank God. So there's no competition between us. I mention that because you have three people, and Celia and Maggie and you in the arts. Are you guys the kind of people that mutually support each other, or is there ever jealousy, competition when you're all in the same field?
It's funny. People always ask me this, and I swear it is not a canned interview response. No, there's zero competition. I could not imagine a world where I would not, where I would possibly hear about one of my sisters achieving something and feel even a tiny bit of jealousy or ambivalence or any kind of complicated feelings. No, I am their biggest fans. Every single time I sit down to see either my sisters, either something that Maggie's written or something that Celia's performing in, I just immediately burst into tears. Whether or not it is a sad show at all, I am just so moved by getting to see any of their work. And I feel so, so lucky because this isn't an easy industry. It's not stable. Yeah. It oftentimes breaks your heart, and having not one, but two sisters who I can call up and just vent my frustrations and can give me real applicable advice because they've lived through it. It is one of the like greatest gifts that I feel like I have as an adult.
Andrew, when you have that kind of spirit of mutual love and support in a family, I have to believe that the seed is planted in parents and grandparents. So tell us about the family of origin, the kind of people that raised you.
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in inner city Detroit. I think I'm like third or fourth generation there. My dad worked for the city. He still works for the city as a city planner. My mom was a kindergarten teacher. They were super involved in the community, really got us interested in like unions and the rights of workers. And I remember being on like picket lines with my mom when I was like six or seven because she was really involved in the teachers union. And I think just taught us a lot about integrity and the importance of empathy in this world, and had an incredible upbringing. And then honestly, my mom passed away when I was 15 years old, and Celia, who is my oldest sister, like really stepped up and became a surrogate parent along with my dad and taking care of Maggie and I, who were still teens at the time and really trying to figure out our forge our way in this world.
Yeah. Andrew, my own mom passed about 3 months ago, but she was obviously much older than your mom. And thank you for that. And, but I wonder, like, as a kid who then has to process the meaning of life and death, your mother's struggle with breast cancer and leaving you guys way too early, how have you developed perspective on what's the purpose of life? What's the meaning of death? I mean, for a kid to lose a mom at that age is massively significant. And it's great that Celia was there for you, but what do you do with death?
Yeah, it's, I mean, enjoy it all. Enjoy everything about life, because I think I learned that lesson very early on, that it is temporary, and hold on to the people you love. And in some ways, I don't think I would be as close with my two sisters if I had not lost a parent at a young age. And I think that is, I think, one of my mom's gifts from beyond the grave, was making sure before she left this world that she was certain that her kids would be there to take care of each other. And now, I mean, those are my two best friends. I was just FaceTiming with them two nights ago. We all live in New York City, which is amazing. We see each other all the time. Now that my oldest sister Celia has a son, babysitting duty is like a regular thing that we all sign up for, and getting to have family dinner. So I think it's two things: to enjoy life, and to understand the gift and the importance of family, and know that that is also not something that you can ever take for granted.
Andrew Keenan Bolger is our guest. He's appearing now in Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors. Andrew, now you're working, and I'm glad to hear that you're working, because you're a wonderful actor. I've seen you on stage. But when you in your career have gone after a part and you were perfect and it didn't happen, how do you personally deal with disappointment?
I mean, on a daily basis, truly. I think also because I've been working in this business since I was a kid, I think that was one of the things that I learned very early on. I mean, I was performing in the original Broadway cast of Seussical the Musical. I was about to open it on Broadway, and my voice changed. And I ended up getting fired as like a child. And I remember it being super traumatic and not really understanding why something like this would happen, because it had been my hobby up until that point. But I think it really did teach me a lesson that this is a business. And ultimately, I wasn't supposed to be in that. Like, it was better for the show to have a kid who could sing it. And so I think learning lessons of rejection really early, it just honestly is steeling yourself to know that it often is not about you. It is about what is the best thing for the production. And then I think also not being myopic about this business, not putting every egg in the basket of success in terms of the arts, because while it has been something that has given me tremendous gifts, it has broken my heart far more often. So finding other things that bring me joy, whether it's learning a new recipe, writing something of my own, going to a yoga class, finding joy and passion in the many other things in life makes dealing with the often daily rejection a lot easier, and have a lot more perspective about it.
Now, Andrew, for our listeners and watchers, can do television, can do movies, but I've had the privilege of seeing him on stage. He's got a charismatic presence. I mentioned that. What was your emotional response, Andrew, to a world that shut down with the pandemic?
I mean, I think we were all completely blindsided. It was devastating. I think, hit the theater industry in a way that it did not all of the other industries. I mean, things were up and going in film and television, and I think like starting in June, July of 2020, Broadway didn't come back for another almost a whole year after that. And already it's a hard business for theater people. I think at any given moment, I think our union has said that 90% of the workforce is unemployed. And so, yeah, it was devastating for our friends. In some ways, though, I think it forced people to really take a look at how the industry was structured. I think that there were a lot of shakeups that happened afterwards. I think also the fact that it sort of happened in conjunction with the George Floyd killing, I think, forced people to really reckon with some of the white supremacy that was very prevalent within the theater industry, and to do some restructuring to make that more equitable for everyone. So I don't think it was a uniquely devastating moment. I think we came back stronger. I think it gave people a lot of sense of perspective. And also, as someone who is, it's impossible to not be jealous of everyone else when they're getting jobs and you are not. It was a moment where I could wake up and never feel jealousy. I was like, this isn't my fault that I haven't been working. Yeah. Like, for once, it's not because I was too short or I was too old or not talented enough or didn't have a good enough voice. Like, there was a shared, we were all a part of that. And there was something really nice about that. And something that I think, sadly, we've forgotten a little bit, but I do think that there was power and strength within that. And, yeah, it's weird. In some ways, I look back with nostalgia, but of course, with like lives lost and livelihoods lost, it was a hard thing that our community had to go through.
Andrew, aside for those folks who don't know, Andrew has been wonderfully good at, especially on his own blog, at sharing the journey of becoming the man that he is. I mention that, Andrew, because I have any number of parents and grandparents. I'm going to take it from the other end. You have a blog out there where you're talking about what it is to be a gay guy who comes out. But I want to flip it and say, for the parents and grandparents who watch and listen to a program like this and wonder, how should I respond to my child when they tell us that they're gay? I'd like you to share with us what you think parents should, what's the best way for parents to respond? And I say this in the context of being happy that we have a Pope in Pope Francis who, after traveling to Chile and meeting with gay men there, said, God doesn't care if you're gay. The Pope doesn't care if you're gay. All anybody cares about is that you live a good, meaningful, and loving life, which was huge for us. But for you, if you're talking to a parent or grandparent who says, I don't know how to respond if my kid decides to tell me that, What's the proper response?
I think that it is different. It's going to be different for everyone. And I feel lucky in that I think my parents were, they handled our both, because my middle sister is also queer, and I think handled it very well, and I feel incredibly privileged. Mm-hmm. I think understanding that it is new information for a lot of parents, and to be expected to be perfect right off the bat and to be totally understanding. Mm-hmm. Your child has been probably going through this journey in their brain maybe since they were a small child, and have had a lot of time being able to try on these labels to feel what is right. So I think not putting too much pressure on yourself to understand and to feel completely okay with it is okay. Telling your child, I think primarily, that you love them and that you want to talk to them and ask them questions, I think take some of the pressure off of trying to be the perfect parent or trying to think that any of this is your fault, which it absolutely is not. Yeah. But just ask questions. I think at the end of the day, when kids are coming out, they want to be seen, and they want to also have questions for you as well. And understanding that it's coming out is a long, long journey. And oftentimes coming out to yourself is the most important step that any child or any adult can make. And I think telling them that you love them and are proud of them for coming to this realization is tremendous.
Andrew Keenan Bolger is our guest. And Andrew, you said a few moments ago, you know, if you're not going to get a job, you want to know it's not because you're too young, too short, too old, or whatever it is. And I want to talk about that aging piece for a second, that we're living in this incredible culture that definitely, you know, deifies and puts on a pedestal youth. But all of us, if we're alive, we're aging, and that's just part of the natural process of life. But I'm in a field where I can be an old guy and it's okay. But you're in a field where people care about being young. So I have to ask you, how do you put in perspective the necessary process that we all go through of aging?
I mean, it's hard. It's without question, the entertainment industry, it will always value youth. And I think I understand it pretty significantly, because all throughout my 20s, I was playing high schoolers. Like, it wasn't until recently that I've been cast as adult roles. And there was a time period where I was too young for the high school roles, or too old for the teenage roles and too young for the adult ones. And that is honestly when I just started trying to find other things that would bring me the same kind of joy or would make me curious and sometimes nervous about putting myself out there, things like writing, things like directing. And then I think honestly, just investing in the close relationships in my life. When I work on my marriage, I can feel successful. When I foster relationships with friends and family, I can feel that kind of success as well. And understanding that, like, aging happens. It happens to literally everyone. No one else has been able to figure this out. And the roles that will eventually come to you will maybe surprise you in the kind of things that they have to offer. The role that I'm playing in Dracula is not something I would have ever had on my vision board as a 25-year-old, but now is so exciting. I get to play 7 different characters in the show and do a whole bunch of accents, and was not necessarily the career trajectory that I thought I would be on, but have been constantly surprised and fulfilled by the many unexpected roads that I've gotten to take.
I had the privilege of seeing Andrew in Newsies years ago. He played Crutchy. And I mentioned that because not long ago we had Benjamin Hall on, who's a reporter who works mostly in war zones. And recently, a couple of years ago, actually 2 years ago, he lost his legs in Ukraine because his car was hit by a Russian bomb. But I said to him what I was thinking about with you with that role. I asked him, did you ever, before you were handicapped, think about what it was to be disabled? And I wondered, when you played a role every night on Broadway, where you play someone who is especially challenged, did you, Andrew, in your whole life ever imagine what it would be like to actually be disabled physically?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. The answer is no. I think that the hard thing about being a disabled person, especially in a place like New York, is that a lot of people don't consider it until it happens to them. Yeah, I mean, all throughout the show, we would have to change blocking and change even like scenery moves where I'm like, I can't go up the stairs at this point. They're like, oh yes, that's right. And while it was a role that I was like so excited to play and so thankful for the opportunity, I feel like now that theater, we are actually really trying to think a lot more about accessibility and allowing people with disabilities to have space in this wonderful community. And I honestly, I've said this a lot. I'm like, I hope that I was one of the first and one of the last people to play Crutchy that did not have a disability. Right now, there's a production over in London where the Crutchy is a disabled person. And I think that just makes it even better because that actor is able to bring a perspective that I don't have to the role and an authenticity.
Andrew Keenan Bulges, I guess. Andrew, I think I know the answer to this question. I'm reading about your parents that raising you guys with values of social justice was very important. But you'd expect a guy wearing a collar to ask this. Did you guys have any upbringing that was spiritual or religious in any way?
Yeah. So my dad is a practicing Catholic. My mom I think probably would have said she was agnostic. So yeah, I grew up in the church. I'm no longer practicing now. I think what I was really looking for when I was young was community. And I think that has provided my father, like, I think the Catholic Church has provided him a tremendous sense of community. I think I ended up finding that in both in theater and within the queer community. And I think that maybe has that has felt like the right fit for me. But I think there are, of course, so many values throughout the texts that teach incredible lessons that I would like to live by. It just doesn't fall under the umbrella of necessarily a organized religion.
Andrew, I have to ask you this because folks, you know, listening to a program like this, we all grew up where if someone said someone was queer, it was a derogative term. And so when someone feels as comfortable as you do using it, I'm sure there are parents and grandparents out there saying, he was really nasty with that word. You don't mean it as nasty. Tell me, how come the transition with that word has happened?
Yeah, I think for some people it hasn't. I have older friends who would identify as gay who they're still like, that doesn't feel right to me. And I don't feel any need to push that on anyone who does not feel comfortable with it. I like it because it feels like an umbrella term. There, I think, especially now is I think I'm learning so much from young people and from Gen Z that the labels that necessarily felt right for people my age don't necessarily translate to them. And it has become more of, I think, an umbrella for the whole kind of rainbow coalition of gay, bi, trans, gender nonconforming people. And I think what I like about it, too, is that it acknowledges that I'm a part of a community that if there is an injustice to one part of our community, whether that be like trans or non-binary people, that it is injustice to all of us. And it's, I think, to me, serves as a good reminder. Also, I don't think I was ever called queer in like a derogatory way. I think that was maybe the generation slightly older than me. I don't know. People had a lot of other things that they could say to me when I was a kid to make fun of me, but queer has never given me the like.
No one should make fun of
it. It doesn't raise my hackles in the way that I understand it to have for, I think, people maybe a little bit older.
Yeah.
So I think it's all call people what they want to be called at the end of the day.
You know,
it doesn't cost much.
Andrew, no one should pick on you or anybody, but I'm going to I'll close with this question. I would hope that that our society will someday be united. But you know, and I know that even on this issue of gay folks, or you know, there's so much division in our country, not just in our country, in the world. It sometimes seems as if half the population is set against the other half. I just got to ask you, because you come across as this happy, hopeful, a positive guy, but do you look at our society and remain a hopeful man?
I honestly do. In spite of everything, for any number of reasons, I think that there is a lot of cause and reason to be sad every single day. And I just, it's never how I have lived my life. I am an eternal, ultimate optimist at the end of the day, and which doesn't necessarily mean ignore the things that are going wrong. I think if my parents taught me anything, it's to point those out and to fight for them, even if they don't affect you directly. But that ultimately, we are all fundamentally wanting to do the right thing. And sometimes folks are just looking for meaning and find it maybe in a person who doesn't necessarily have the best in their best interest at stake. But I think, especially being an actor, we are in the empathy business. We step into different characters every single day and understand that people do not all react in the same way to the same things, and that a lot of hurt people hurt out there, and try to remain as positive as possible in spite of the many things that would make it easy to feel nihilist.
I want to thank Andrew Keenan-Volger for being a guest on Personally Speaking. I hope our listeners and watchers will come to New York and see Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors. But if you see Andrew in anything, he's truly a creative force. And most importantly, I wanted people to watch and listen to this program because, Andrew, you have this reputation now affirmed once more of being this positive, happy, upbeat guy who definitely sees the glass of life as half full, more than half empty. And thank you so much for everything you had to say to us today.
Thank you so much.
It was
truly
for your talent
and
who you are as a man.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
As we end today's program, I thank you for being with us. If you need to reach me, you can get me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to not just listen to this program, you can also see it on YouTube by going to Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti. If you do, please hit like and subscribe. We're also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti, and now we're on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer of Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.